Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius of Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, our associate editor, Dr. Teresa O'Halloran, speaks with Dr. Terrell Portman, associate professor at the University of Iowa. Their conversation is about peer supervision using reflecting teams with school counselors.
Well, welcome. I'm Dr. Teresa O'Halloran, and I'm here today with Dr. Terrell Portman from the University of Iowa. I'm looking forward to our conversation today regarding peer supervision in school counseling. And Terrell's going to talk to us today about a reflective team approach. So welcome, Dr. Portman.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. So first, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background in school counseling and counselor education.
I am now a professor and coordinator of the school counseling program at the University of Iowa. I have been there for 8 years, and so I've been involved heavily in training school counselors for that 8 years. Prior to that, I was at the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville, where as a graduate student, I had 4 years of experience working and supervising school counselors. And prior to that, I spent 15 years in public schools, and 8 of those years were as a school counselor. So I've been a school counselor at the elementary level, middle level, and the secondary level. And most of my experience was in larger school systems. But it ranged from being a school counselor in an Ozark community, K-12, the student population was 250 students, to a suburban St. Louis school where at the high school we had 10th through 12th graders, and there were about 1,600 students.
Wow. Well, you're drawing on a lot of varied experience about school counselors, so I'm looking forward to this. Sounds great. Thank you. So, well, let's start. I'm imagining from all that background is part of how you drew an interest in peer supervision in school for school counselors. Tell me some about that.
Yes, I think it's from my background and having been through the experience of being supervised with administrative supervision as a school counselor and at that time working with a teacher evaluation scale and saying, this doesn't fit me. I was trained in Missouri and so basically came into being a school counselor under the Missouri Model Guidance Program. So I've never known an existence without comprehensive developmental guidance. And being in that process, we had to train our administrators, and Missouri had a wonderful program in place with Norm Geisbers and Marion Starr where the administrators went to learn about comprehensive developmental guidance. And in that experience, the administrative supervision was there, but the clinical supervision was absent. Then when I began to enter into a counselor education program and the reality of supervising interns and practicum students and working with site supervisors, it was very obvious that there was a lack of supervision in the schools for the clinical skills in that counselor development. And that was about the time that there were articles coming out related to the lack of supervision. Pam Paisley has done some work in that area. Lori Crutchfield, there's been quite a few things related to the need for the continued supervision with school counselors out in the field.
So, and in part, that's almost in comparison to what a community counselor, the kind of supervision a community counselor might receive.
Right. What we have is an imbalance within the counseling profession. The requirement for clinical supervision within an agency setting was much stronger. And as a licensed mental health counselor, I have been in that field to where we had clinical staffings and consultations related to clients. And it was a valued experience beyond that. But in the school systems, the nature of schools and administrative process and evaluation, and typically because there may be only one school counselor in a system, that the supervision wasn't there. So what it turned to be more instead of the traditional clinical supervision, was more consultation with peers.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so that was how people, and I think to this day, how people get a lot of their peer supervision, but we don't call it that, and it's not structured as such.
Mm-hmm. So say some more about peer supervision. What is that? How would you define that?
I define peer supervision much similar to what our students experience in KCREP counseling programs, to where there's a group of five or six who actually get into a room and discuss cases and discuss primarily the counseling skills and the decision making that they have during that supervision process and get feedback from peers at the same developmental level and or peers who are at advanced levels of a development in counseling, so that that supervision occurs, it's focused, it's compartmentalized, and it's not just talking about what you're going to fix for supper or what your family obligations are, that there really are issues related to counselor skill development and professional development.
And so if what kinds of peer supervision are in place in school settings now?
I haven't found too much related to that. I'm very interested in this as a research area. And what I've had are the students that I've trained at the University of Iowa. When I've had internship, it's been reflective teaming, and you teach the process. And those students are, in some cases, meeting at restaurants in the evening and coming in if they're close enough to each other, and they're continuing with that process. And that's what I would like to do. I will begin next year a research project with a graduating class this year where it will be a virtual peer supervision environment that's password protected, and they've actually asked for that. And so that will be something that's ongoing. As I said earlier, I think the peer supervision that's happening predominantly in schools now is consultation type activities related to the question of, what should I do with this student? I have this case. What should I do? Should I contact the principal? The other piece of the supervision is that many school counselors call their mentors and their professors. Mm-hmm. And so the emails or the telephone calls saying, I just wanted to run something past you. I have a student whose parent is terminally ill, and the school district is not in favor of changing a policy that would require the student to have more absences than the policy requires. How can I advocate for the student? And so when I get calls like that, my first response is, what have you done so far? And so it becomes a supervision involvement. The process of supervision to me really is that you begin by working as developmentally as counselors going through a counselor development process, then move into more of a collegial relationship and supervision, to where there's more autonomy, there's a more stable level of motivation. You're not so worried about, what am I thinking, what am I doing, what am I going to say next, or being in that level two development, to where you're so much involved with the client or the student that you're taking on all their pain that you can't be objective about what's going on. So I think in the schools, what's happening now is more consultation, moving more into a peer supervision that isn't as focused on the counselor development as it is on the client case.
Well, so that's one of your goals, is to increase the focus on the counselor development, it sounds like, the self-development of the counselor.
Right.
And so when we talk about the reflective team approach, does that assist in that process?
Oh,
and
yes.
Maybe you could start by explaining the reflective team approach.
The reflective team approach really comes from marriage and family therapy. And what it was a gentleman was working with a child and with a family, and it happened to where the family discussion was going on, and there was a group of people watching from another room, like a two-way mirror. In this situation, the therapist who was working with the family was at a loss and decided, well, let's bring in the other team, the observers, see what they saw. That was done, and the family remained in the room. The family did not interact with the observers, but the observers talked about what they had seen, objectively what they had seen.
With the counselor.
With the counselor. Mm-hmm. And the family, kind of in a fishbowl approach, mm-hmm. where you have a group within a group watching. Then the family entered into a discussion with the observers and with the therapist to give feedback to insights that they had gained from the conversation. The reflective team approach that I've used in counselor preparation and internship, really it's much different than the traditional group supervision, to where you have a round robin. You mm-hmm. get 5 minutes, play a little bit of your tape, tell us what's going on with this case, and then we go on to the other five people in the room. What the reflective team approach does is, in one given three-hour group supervision session, there may be only two cast members who present a case. Audio tapes or videotapes will be presented, and you might get 30 minutes of the tape. Then the person who it's their time to be on, they're the person that's the target, the counselor that's the target, talks about what they did with the case, the decisions they made, where they're feeling frustrated, where they feel that they did a great job, what they would like to learn, where they would like to go, what are the treatment goals or plans for this particular case. At that point, the person stops their case presentation. The leader of the group asks questions that are clarifying questions. I heard you say that with this case you're feeling frustrated. What was the level of intensity of that frustration? Help us to understand. And it's really just to get more understanding about where the counselor's at. Then the leader and the counselor who's on for that night step back. Really, they just sit in the room in the chair and keep their mouths closed while the other group members who are in group supervision talk about what they heard and what they were curious about. Now, in the beginning, they're taking notes. Now it's time for the leader and the person who's on to take notes. In this conversation, there are some standard questions or question stems that are used. Like, I was wondering if, and they call the counselor by name. For example, if you were on, I would say, I was wondering if Teresa really picked up that when she's talking about this client, you hear a crack in her voice, and I'm wondering if there's something in her background that she's really transferring to this student or mm-hmm. thinking about that. The other students continue by asking questions. They don't respond to the question. They say, well, you know, I caught that, but I'm curious as to, she mentioned, I understand about your relationship with your mother because I've been there. How much of that is interfering with her objectivity in the case? Was there abuse in her background? You know, those kinds of things. So after that time is completed, then the person who's on comes back in this stage, which would be the fourth stage, and responds to the insights that they gained and responds to the questions without further probes by the other group members. So the reflection piece goes back and forth in reflexivity. Then after that response is done, the leader can ask questions during that time, mainly to say, well, this group member asked this question about your background, and I noticed you didn't address that. Is there something you'd like to say to that? And then come through. Then at the end of the reflective team process, every member in the room, person on and the leader, talk about what happened and the possibility of further initiatives or insights that were gained. Then there's usually a break, and then you come back and do that for the second person. So there's a schedule that's involved. Mm-hmm. So every 3 weeks, two people are presenting with a group of six.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the reflective team process. What you get with the reflective team approach in counselor development is it's not a superficial level of supervision that occurs. It is a focus that moves from being on the client and helping the student, the school counselor's work intern is working with, to a focus on the school counselor in training and their development and their skills and their own inner world in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that the level of development that I've seen and changed from the beginning of the year, a semester, to the end of the semester is sometimes profound.
I would imagine.
And there's some amazing things. I actually have a doctoral student who worked with me in one of those reflective team group supervisions and is now doing research on reflective teaming. So what I see in peer supervision in school counseling that could occur, and this is what I'm hoping to do with the research, is that you would get a group of school counselors, 6 to 8, in the same local area, who would get together in a virtual environment. They could get together in person, like some of my past students, because they don't want to let go of that process. Train them to use the reflective teaming model, and then have that ongoing in a virtual environment to where they have that support group in place, but it's focused on them as school counselors and their school counseling developmental skills, which might include working with students, or will include working with students and their academic, career, personal, social needs, advocacy issues, but it also would include those school culture issues with working with administration, their interactions with teachers, with other adults in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it would allow a venue for when school counselors might be going through their own personal issues and how that would be affecting their work performance, for example, a divorce or a death or
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow, how exciting.
So.
I want to just review mm-hmm. a little bit of what you said, because you explained your whole process
mm-hmm.
there, and it's wonderful. I'm struck by two things. One is that it's a very structured process, mm-hmm. and it would seem to me that not only is the counselor who's the target, so mm-hmm. to speak, of that session benefiting, but so are the leader and the reflective team, because they learn a new way of thinking about the relationship of the counselor and the client, and their responsibility is so great, so large,
right.
that they sounds like they take it on really well.
Right. It's amazing. I think there's a little resistance in the beginning because it is a new process. I had that early on, but once I had a group that had gone through it, they passed the word down to other students that
mm-hmm.
they liked it. Now I have had so many students that have graduated have used it that they want to come back to it as professionals in the field. There's some resistance at the beginning. It's very structured mm-hmm. to the point that there are even questions
yes.
in front of them and the stage, the process. And early on, I have to say sometimes, no, this is not a time for you to speak. Write it down. So that after you do that a couple times, then they can do it. By the end of the process, they're able to lead the process, and I actually have had students who were working on issues of speaking up in groups lead the group. And I'll say, well, today, Becky's going to lead the group. Is that okay with you? And so she takes the leader role, and I can become a part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the process can actually go on
without
excellent.
Me.
But it is a very good process
mm-hmm.
for vicarious learning
mm-hmm.
of the others. And what it does is take the pressure off of not listening to the client case, because you feel that you're going to be coming up and what are you going to say, and do you have your case conceptualization ready and all of those
mm-hmm,
kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. And additionally, I think one of the points you made about school counselors needing also to learn how to work with administration effectively, I hear too that the reflective team and the leader would be learning skills to be able to frame things so that others can hear them.
Yes.
Even if they have a hot button touch, you know, if
yes.
the counselor's sitting in their chair going, the administrator did it again,
mm-hmm.
they have now learned a way to phrase things in which the other person can hear it. The administrator could hear,
yes.
this is what I see, and I wonder how we can work on this differently.
Yes, and they learn mediation skills.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I get feedback from people after they've been in the field, is that, you know, I was able to use those reflective team questions. in a mediation situation the other day. And so it's nice to get that feedback.
Exciting. Students, so. Absolutely. So let's see. Are there special skills, do you think, that school counselors need to develop during this process other than maybe we've touched on, if you want to identify any?
Well, I think the basic micro-counseling skills, I think the biggest skill would be listening actively, that active listening, because now it's not about trying to fix the client case or the student case, and it's not about fixing the counselor. It's working collegially in a way that you can promote growth or awareness. For example, one of the people who were involved with a reflective team was working in an elementary school. She did not have children herself and was an older student. And we had the issue to where the requirement of the class that they had to meet with clients on more than one basis. In this situation, this counselor had arrived at a developmental level number two, which is basically that adolescent, I'm feeling so much and so enmeshed kind of with the client's feelings, that she became so involved with the progress this student was making and began to speak of the student as if it were her child. And through the reflective team process, after about the fourth session of taping with this, she'd worked with him when they weren't taping, it came out that she really was so close to this case that she could not provide adequate care because it had moved into a different relationship and was getting close to a dependency relationship from the student onto to this person. And so I had to say, you can't work with this student anymore. You need to talk with your site supervisor and don't bring any more tapes in. You need to start slowly transitioning out because you're not going to be there in a month. And the student actually started tearing up and saying, I don't know if I can do that. I just don't know if I can let this kid go.
Wow.
And the other students had to come in there and say, you know, we've learned about counselors working with their clients, and you are in this, obviously in a level two. And this was coming from my students, you know, I didn't have to do anything. And they were saying, so you have to realize your role as a counselor is being compromised because you're feeling too much for this child. And she did that. She didn't want to do it, and I'm sure she went away angry. But she came back and she said, you know, I had to learn that. I really had to do that. And it took a couple of weeks, but then she presented another case and she was able to have that growth to realize her role as a school counselor in that position. And that came from the reflective team process. I don't think that lesson would have been learned in a traditional just play 5 minutes, because I don't think it would have been picked up on until maybe her first or second year as a school counselor in the field.
Wow, that's an interesting benefit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it would come, the intensive focus and the reflection kinds of questions really helped her get to that sooner.
Right. It accelerates the process of counselor development in my observation and processing of it.
Your experiences of it, sure. So what are some of the challenges in using this model? I think we've alluded to several.
Well, one is that you really need a facilitator or a leader who is sold on the process and is very knowledgeable of group work, because I think that there are some issues of group work that could come into play. For example, if you have somebody who wants to dominate the conversation and isn't willing to let someone else have their turn, then that could be a part of it. Another challenge is teaching the reflective model. And if you're in an institution where somebody else is having internship and they're not using reflective teaming and a person wants to hide, they may bring up issues of, why do we have to do this? This is this is painful sometimes, which brings up another challenge, and that is the role of the facilitator in that group with bringing up painful issues or pointing out issues related to maybe how the counselor is interacting with the student, especially if it's tied to issues related to family crisis that happened in that counselor's life early
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
We had a situation to where no one in the room had knowledge that this counselor, who was the target, had been from a family where there was divorce very early in his elementary career, and he was at an elementary and dealing with a child going through issues of divorce, and there were clearly some things coming up that weren't coming from the client. And one of the reflective team questions was, I'm wondering why this is such a strong feeling when the client doesn't seem to have these strong feelings. Why does the counselor have the strong feelings? And it came out that and the insight was that he realized that he was going back to that time in his life. And so you have to be prepared for what doors get open when you're talking about an in-depth look at counseling skill. And so the personal growth that's involved, I think, outweighs all of that. But there has to be the informed consent or upfront disclosure that there are possibility that this will cause you to reassess and reflect upon your experience in social construction.
Absolutely. Yeah, effective supervision does that, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I know we've mentioned many of the strengths because I was jumping up and down about them over here in my chair. You know, the potential growth of students. It seems like even though within structure it's a flexible model because different members could come and join this team. What other strengths might you see?
Well, I think the strength of it not only is the developing a framework for considering supervision, and particularly for developing a framework for peer supervision among colleagues that are post-graduation. I think the strength is having a support system for many of those counselors who may be the only counselor in a district. I would also say that I think this would work best in larger schools if you had counselors from different buildings, not those that saw each other daily. Because I think that the vulnerabilities that can come from this might exacerbate maybe some of the minor disagreements that could occur within, like if five counselors were in the same counseling center in a large school. So I think it could work, but it depends on the team. So I would not probably suggest that. So the strengths would be the ability to talk to people from outside the daily environment and the context.
Absolutely. And getting more community built in that school, either district or across district even, which
and
is...
It could work with a cross-section of counseling, too. It wouldn't have to just be school counselors. It could be school counselors like in a community to where there's a mental health facility and where there's a substance abuse agency to where those school counselors get to, or those counselors get together, because counseling is counseling in that sense that they can still talk about the different counselor developmental levels and then learn from each other. And so it could build community collaboration kind of models. There's a lot of possibilities.
There are. So obviously you've developed a clear model for you and your students, and some of your students out in the field are wanting to continue it. Have you written the model for others to pull up and learn from Dr. Portman?
I haven't done that. And actually, I can't take credit for the model because I was actually at an American Counseling Association conference a few years ago and went to one of the sessions, and someone, I'm sorry to say I don't remember the name right now, but someone from Troy State in Alabama was presenting this model, and they had done a little bit with it, and I just fell in love with the process and went back and actually, you know, I thought it would work, but I really didn't know, and then began to try it in small segments within internships. But then whenever I did the full semester of it and saw how amazing the process was, that's when I became very sold on it. And I know that Dr. Jane Cox has worked with some of the reflective teaming in the past. So I think that I can't take credit for it just being, I could write up and talk about our process, but but I'm sold on this idea.
Yeah.
And I intend to write up about the peer supervision, of course, from the research that's done in the next year.
Great, great. So what do you have any recommendations you might make for counselors who might want to set up some peer supervision process?
Well, I think what they would be well served by would be if they could contact their local university, if there's someone close, and get in touch with a faculty member who knows supervision research and who's involved in supervision, and ask them if they would be interested in facilitating at least the beginning of the group, to where they can get going, or find someone who has been trained in a program that has that. Reality is there are many places that don't have a university close.
Sure.
So I think that I would welcome people writing or whatever and sending the model, because it's very easily followed if you stick to the structure. And then going through like that, or attending conferences and workshops where there could be that. I believe the best thing that would work with self-advocacy for school counselors is to contact the American School Counseling Association and demand that there be training in peer supervision, not just a PowerPoint saying this is how you should do it, but actual workshop-type activities, maybe in a pre-conference session. If there were the demand by school counselors for that, then the service would be offered, I have no doubt.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. All right. Well, you've shared a great deal here about using a reflective team approach with counselors in the field. And I wonder if you have any final thoughts to wrap us up here?
Well, no. I would suggest anyone listening to the counselor audio source actually go and put in reflective teaming into their library search, pull up some of the documents, pull up some of the articles. Kitchener and King have some books on reflectivity. That would help with the awareness process and to get a grounding in secondary materials about reflective teaming before they actually want to go out. So get that conceptual framework. Many of us will rely on our training programs and how we were trained for supervision instead. And so this may be a paradigm shift for some people. So I would encourage further looking into the literature.
Yes, so as you said, both literature and then getting active training as well.
Right.
Training, live action training. Great. Well, we at Counselor Audio Source, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You've just heard an interview with Dr. Terrell Portman of the University of Iowa regarding peer supervision with school counselors using a reflecting team model. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselorAudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.